The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Josh Weinfuss from ESPN, their Arizona Cardinals reporter insider, with us here in about 10 minutes. DeAndre Hopkins' contract is done. It's mega. It's massive. It's nice of Josh to join us on Breaking News Day. We'll do a deep dive on the Cardinals. Josh Weinfuss at 10:20. Michael Fabiano with Sandy Charles. All things on the fantasy football front today. Coming up at 10:45, I have my draft tonight. Nobody cares when people say, hey, let me tell you about my fantasy team. Goodbye. See you later. Thanks for playing. But it is fun. It is something different. And I'm with the same guy I've been doing this with for 31 years. We're excited to have another year of fantasy football. So there. Our opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. So when I talk to you about Desert Financial Credit Union, it's a place that we use at Sports 360 AZ. On the financial side, Desert Financial Credit Union, we use them. I don't sit here and talk about places I don't use or products I don't like. I've had that happen to me in the past where it's like, hey, say something about it. I don't use you. Desert Financial Credit Union, I'm there. And I'm there a lot taking care of business on the Sports 360 AZ side and on a personal side as well. They can help you out, drive on through, walk on in. They mask up. They give you water on the way out the door. Very friendly, very nice, very neighbor next door-ish type of feel, which I like, and very competent, very competent. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. Eric is with us after a long weekend. What'd you do? You were gone for, gosh, I don't know, a few days. What did you do? Where'd you go?
I was gone from Phoenix for about 12 hours on Friday. And then the rest of the weekend, I just kind of unplugged and tried to stay away from my phone and just sort of what?
Work?
Yeah.
Staying away from your phone? I didn't bug you, did I?
No. No, you didn't at all. I took a day trip to Flagstaff on Friday, which was fun.
Yeah.
I got caught up with a couple of NAU football players that played high school ball down here in the Valley. And I went by Flag High and watched a little of their practice, which was really cool. Because I've talked to their head coach quite a bit, but I'd never met him. Yeah. So it's good to see football, you know, in a different light outside of Phoenix. And I have to tell you, Brad, because you'll get a kick out of this. I was perusing around the NAU bookstore looking to frivolously spend some money on a hoodie I'd probably wear like twice. And these people behind me, they were not elderly, but they were probably in like their 50s. And they commented on the fact
Whoa, wait a minute. What's wrong with being in your 50s?
Nothing. Hey, I said they were elderly. This is a quick story. And they said, it was a husband and wife, and I wasn't eavesdropping, but I just heard the conversation. They said, can you even believe how hot it is? And the wife is like, oh, it's so hot today. It was like 82, I think, in Flagstaff.
What are you picking on those poor people for?
I'm just like,
they've got thin skin. Maybe they grew up in a different climate. Maybe you should practice race.
Drive 2 hours south and add 27 degrees and let me know what you think about hot. So I just chuckled. That's all.
I chased a golf ball around Saturday and that stuff. I actually went to a lesson. I took a golf lesson.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. My swing is jacked up, man. I knew it. But I was out there by myself in 115 degrees trying to straighten it out. That's not a good combination.
I heard golf lessons are well worth it. They're not cheap, but I heard if you have a good instructor, it can like magically change your game if you're not good at golf like I am. So
this person just said to me, you really blow. It's we're not gonna solve anything here. But let me take your money and no, he was fine. He was fine. I'm not gonna go that often, but no, on a sport end, so BYU. They did what they did, and today, any coach on the high school or college level saying, I'm not going to do what Navy did, poor Ken Notlamahu, as I say that correctly, their head coach at Navy admitted that, you know, we didn't tackle. And you can't simulate tackling. And these coaches that have said, we don't want to get into the season because we don't want to get anybody hurt because we have to simulate tackling. That's why out here in the wild, wild west, from what I've been hearing, to say there's been no tackling, bullshit, I would say on that. So the way BYU handled them, if I would have told you BYU is going to have a better record than Utah early in the season, you wouldn't have believed me probably. If I would have told you Utah would have furloughed their entire athletic department, athletic director, football coach, everybody, all furloughed out, you wouldn't have believed me. If I would have told you Southern Miss's coach is just going to either get fired or walk after one game, probably wouldn't have believed me. This is the world of college football that we're in. I think Arkansas State already has two games. Little old Arkansas State has played twice already. And I'm watching BYU last night just jack stomp all over Navy. And their offensive line is a bunch of behemoths. And Romney is catching balls right and left after a slow start. He was really good in that game. So here's a kid, Gunnar Romney, who's from Chandler High School. So there was a lot to like on college football. And then Kirk Herbstreit crying. I don't know if you saw Kirk Herbstreit crying or not. I liked it. And of course, it turned into politics. Of course, there were people on social that said, I'm done with Kirk Herbstreit because he's crying over the divisiveness within a locker room. There's just been endless storylines around college football. And I love it. I'm so happy today.
I was texting a friend last night, and we both agreed that watching Navy BYU was like watching a scrimmage. It's going to be hard to get really excited for games where there is no one in the stands. And in terms of what happened on the field, Brad, BYU was the perfect team to travel across country and play Navy because they're older, they're more mature, they've been tackling. They have a two-year, soon-to-be three-year starting quarterback returning. Like, it was the perfect storm for BYU just to go across the country and destroy Navy. And BYU's schedule is so horrible. They could be one of those undefeated teams at the end of the year from a non-group of five a non-power five that could be like, hey, look at us. We're 9-0. We've played no one, but we're undefeated. So what are you going to do about it?
They're the team on the West Coast for us to root for. There's nobody else out here, right? Is there any? What is the closest school out west other than BYU that's playing this year?
That's it.
I think that's New Mexico State's not playing, right? UTEP's playing.
Well, they're in the Sun Belt, so
they're playing.
New Mexico State might be playing. I'm not sure.
UTEP is playing Texas this week. That will be a jack stomp. So we could say go Miners. We could say go Cougars. We could say go Aggies. I mean, we could adopt a team. If you're Arizona State, because they were supposed to play BYU.
Right.
All right? I know they're unhappy that they're not playing. Is it a good thing if you're an ASU fan that they didn't play BYU this year?
No. The best
thing. Well, obviously because they're not playing. But do you think ASU would have beat BYU?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
You just think
Navy didn't tackle all offseason. They didn't tackle. They did not hit each other. What did you expect to happen last night?
If
Reese Davis is like, hey, did you know, Kirk, that, you know, I guess Navy, they haven't even been in pads. Like, what? And now you're going to play a game against, like, a bunch of, like, 22 and 23-year-old gigantic bodies at BYU?
It was so great to hear Bill Belichick just go on and on and on, like, please stay on the air with us, because that was their filler. No, Bill Belichick was the filler.
I watched Hard Knocks. I turned the game off at halftime, so.
Oh, my gosh. No, but you know, like, Oklahoma State Tulsa gets postponed, and so we're going to have to put up with that stuff. Like, I want to see Miami of Florida play this Thursday. DeAndre King, who came over from Houston, you know, Rob Likens is a wide receiver coach down there at Miami of Florida. And so I'm kind of interested to see how they look. Clemson plays Duke. That'll be a jack stomp, but it's still Clemson Duke, right? So I can start looking ahead to week two and say there's some games out here. Like, I want to see Bijan Robinson this Saturday because he's going to play, because it's going to be 50-0 Texas in the second quarter over UTEP. So there's some sides of college football that have me excited. At the same time, the dysfunctionality of what's gone on with the Pac-12, and if the Pac-12, Larry Scott last week saying, hey, we have this great partnership, typical Pac-12 way of going about business. We have this great partnership. And so, wait, SMU had the same company 30 days ago. So what you're telling me is the partnership, which means what they agreed to terms on. didn't get done until last week. Because if the partnership had gotten done last week or last month, we would have had football by now. They're doing this with other colleges. So the business side of it drives me crazy. I think having the Pac-12 against the Big Ten would be pretty cool, actually. I do think that.
Yeah, agreed.
To see Jim Harbaugh sparring with his president, because he doesn't care. Like, the president's going to come down there and say, no, you're fired. Jim Harbaugh doesn't care. He's got so much dough, and he's got clout. So he's saying, president, you're wrong. We should be playing. I love this.
I think it's weird, Brad. Well, first of all, I'm sure you saw TCU was supposed to play SMU this coming Saturday, and it got postponed because TCU apparently is going crazy on COVID numbers. You know, you need 53 healthy players to play a game, and apparently TCU doesn't have 53 non-COVID-related players right now to play their game. So they're going to start a week from Saturday against Iowa State. In terms of the Big Ten, do you think it's going to be odd if the Big Ten does start their schedule, like, around Thanksgiving or whatever, and, like, the other three Power Fives are playing, like, their playoffs and playing for the trophy, and the Big Ten is, like, in the middle of their Big Ten schedule at the same time? It's just going to be weird. Well, you know, Ohio State's going to be like, wait, we need to be playing those teams. We don't need to be hosting, like, Purdue in week five.
But I will tell you, sitting here in this coming in week two, can it only get worse? Like, as a TCU fan, which you are, you were very much looking forward to the game. Now they push it back. Okay, you're not going to have any games, and you're coming into Iowa State, who's going to have a game under their belt because they have Louisiana Lafayette this weekend.
Correct.
So they're going to have an advantage.
Yep.
They're going to have an advantage. And if there's more COVID tests, are they going to push back? And are you finally just going to say, as big a TCU fan as I am, forget it. Let's not do this. This is ridiculous.
Some of my friends that are season ticket holders at TCU are basically just saying, like, why are we even trying to play this season?
Yes.
And they told me that a month ago.
Yes.
And I was like, no. And then, you know, my friend's like, hey, did you see the SMU game got canceled? It's like, why? And he's like, well, I guess COVID is going crazy on campus and it's a safety issue. And I totally get it. So,
but I think that there's going to be some people out there saying the Pac-12 and Big Ten did it right. I do think that's going to happen. Now, the diehard football person that all they care about is they have to have their football, they won't care. They won't care. They're the ones that were watching Bill Belichick last night and watched all the way to the end of 55-3. And they know the fifth string left tackle. Good for them. Knock them out. But there's only like this many people in the country that do that. So I'm just interested, as this continues to unfold and there's cancellations, will there be a blowback and people actually saying, you know what, the Pac-12 did it right? I don't know. I just was not happy that Larry Scott trumped around like, hey, look, man, we got this deal and it's great and it's awesome and it's amazing. And then the backstory is, well, no, it's been out there for a month. And so it's just a business deal. That's all.
And in terms of the football side, I mean, the Pac-12 has been pretty radio silent over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And you're just not hearing much about anything that's going on from any of the programs.
Yeah, there's some stuff, but we'll take a break here. Josh Weinfuss will be with us on the other side. Eric and I are going to talk about three green lights. Three green lights. If you're a high school football fan in Arizona, or you're saying, oh, there's going to be a season. Well, no, there's not, because three green lights needed to happen a week ago. And for some reason, it was conveniently just kind of pushed to the side. So we'll get to that after we talk about DeAndre Hopkins' big contract with Josh Weinfuss from ESPN. That's next. Right, as promised, Josh Weinfuss with us. And with breaking news on the DeAndre Hopkins contract, I'm surprised and pleased that you're able to join us. What do you make out of this news from ESPN's side, your side, NFL side, big day?
Yeah, so Hopkins got a 5-year extension, basically a brand new deal, $42.5 million guaranteed. So it's going to keep him in Arizona for a long time, which essentially makes him kind of the heir apparent to Larry Fitzgerald whenever Fitzgerald decides to retire. You know, now that Hopkins under contract, the Cards will have that star power receiver seemingly long after Fitz is gone. But I'm not surprised it's done now, you know, because there's so much financial uncertainty after this season because of the salary cap issues that will be a result of this season. I'm not surprised that they got it done.
Well, it's really interesting to me, Josh, is I ran into Steve Keim over the summer, and we were talking just about how
with the pandemic and trying to budget ahead to next year, not knowing at the time about fans and stands, not knowing about anything to do with revenue. They're really playing here with money that they're just, I know the NFL has an endless supply of bucks, but they really don't know what their number is going to be moving forward. Is this something you and I could look at 5 years from now and say, phew, man, they should have never done that deal?
No, I think because this is only going to be a short-term thing. I think next year, obviously, the cap floor is going to be changed. But if fans can be back in the stands in 2021, I think we're going to see the salary cap go back up and probably be raised for 2021, 22, 23, and so on. So in the long run, this might end up looking like a good deal, but I don't think we're going to sit here and cut, you know, 4 or 5 years and say, wow, that was a lot of money. And that kind of, you know, was a major issue for this franchise. I just don't see that happening because of the long-term financial effect, but that only comes into play if fans are allowed back in. So we'll have to see what happens on that front.
The reports were that, that Hopkins did this deal on his own. No agent was involved. Is that a page from Fitz's playbook? What do you make out of that?
It might be a wave of the future. You know, we're seeing more and more guys who are doing their own deals. Now, is it the smartest thing? Maybe, maybe not, because I think there's a lot that goes into it that players, A, don't know, and B, maybe just don't have the time to deal with it. So it's always good to have someone representing you, but at the same time, he doesn't have to give that 3% over now. That's a lot of money coming out of a deal that large. So, we might see more and more guys go that route, but I don't think it's going to become like a major trend where players start to dump their agents, you know, maybe in their second, third, or fourth deal, but not in their first deal.
ESPN's Josh Weinfuss with us for a couple of minutes. Cardinals open their season on Sunday at San Francisco. Okay, so Buda Baker gets this big deal. DeAndre Hopkins gets this big deal. Who's next on the Cardinal roster?
It's going to be either Chandler Jones going to get an extension, I think, or we're going to look at Patrick Peterson maybe getting a new deal, I think, at some point. You know, he's 30 years old, heading into, I think this is the last year of his contract. So that's kind of, he's a lame duck, if you will. But if he can still play up to the status that he's been known for, maybe make another Pro Bowl, kind of show that, hey, I'm 30, but I'm still playing like I'm 26, 27, then I can see him getting a couple of years longer with the Cardinals. But 30 for a cornerback is kind of into that murky water of we don't know how he's going to be long-term. So I think those two guys are going to be the next targets for the Cardinals.
It's interesting because I remember when Tyrann Mathieu got his big deal, and I was at that press conference, and everybody was all excited and then gone. And Patrick Peterson got his deal, and all of a sudden, some rough, choppy waters. Doesn't always work out, but it's very interesting to see how Steve Keim, I don't know, 10 months ago was get him out of here, and now all of a sudden, money's just falling off the trees to get these guys done.
Yeah, but it all comes down to wins and losses. If this team has another 5-win season or maybe less, if something goes wrong, then I think we're going to see the heat back on Steve Keim. But, you know, right now he seems to be in a good grace period, you know, because of the offseason moves and rebuild their defense. But if this team doesn't show up on the field, then I think we're going to see a lot of people in hot water after the season.
All right, so let's get to that. What do you expect, first of all, on Sunday? Is it going to be sloppy, lousy, a team didn't hit enough type of football? Or do you think, you know what, Cliff's got them ready to go? I mean, what can you really make out of the last month?
Not much at all. I mean, it's going to be a little of both, in my opinion. I think we're going to see some sloppy play, some guys maybe even, you know, suffering some injuries because they haven't had those hits yet this offseason. But I think in the same token, this offense is going to hit the ground running, in my opinion. I think they're going to pick up from where they left off. They won two of their last three to finish 2019, and they almost won that third one, that season finale in Los Angeles against the Rams. I think they lost by about a touchdown. So I think this offense is going to pick up where it left off. They're going, especially now with DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, you give Kyler Murray that type of weapon, I think that we're going to start seeing some fireworks in week one. The defensive side of the ball, I think the bigger question, because you have so many new pieces that need to get on the same page, but there's so much talent there that maybe they don't need to be in unison as much as we think to perform. But I do think we're going to see some sloppiness. We're going to see some fireworks, some stardom, but it's going to be interesting week one.
Your view of Kyler Murray and how he's just changed physically and how he's releasing the football. Again, we haven't seen since the Rams game last year, different looking guy than what you saw a year ago.
Physically, he's a little bit bigger. He's put on some weight. I did a story with his trainer this offseason. He said he put on about 10 pounds, but it wasn't an additional 10 pounds. So I guess during the season, they have something called caloric deficit, where players tend to lose weight simply because their bodies are working so hard so often. So it's just a natural weight loss. And so what Murray's trainer told me, he basically added that weight back on. So he's right around the 205 area, which is kind of what he started last season at. But throwing the ball, he doesn't look any different. Definitely, you know, some of the offseason workouts that he went through were designed to help keep him healthy, to help take some hits, to make his body a little bit more limber and flexible and be able to sustain the weekly grind of NFL hits. So hopefully for his sake, that worked and he can stay on the field longer, but we'll see.
What's your view on baseball with Kyler Murray?
Oh, I think it's done. I think it's done. I think he knows there's a lot more money in baseball. Yeah, I do. He's the star quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's a star quarterback in the NFL. Like, there's only 32 of those jobs. He's coming off a rookie of the year season. I mean, he has one of the most sought after positions in all of sports. Whereas if he went to baseball, he might just be another center fielder. And yeah, sure, center fielders might be the stars or whatnot, but there are more eyes on him in this sport than there ever would be in baseball, especially with the Oakland A's. So I don't think they will ever see him strap on a baseball uniform ever.
Cliff Kingsbury, what do you expect in year two that's different from year one?
I think he learned a lot year one about how to manage an NFL offense. There are a lot of there's a steep learning curve early in the season, whether it was how to deal with the hash marks, how to deal with the roster. Because college, you have 85 to 100 guys. So you can have a wide receiving corps of 10 to 12 guys and just keep rotating them in like hockey lines. Whereas in the NFL, you're dealing with 53, a hard 53. So you have to figure out how to use these guys a little bit better, a little bit smarter. So I think, you know, you could tell by the end of last season that he was starting to figure it out. And I think that's what's going to carry over to this season. He's gone through a whole offseason now with an understanding of how NFL locker rooms work, how NFL football works, how NFL players work. I think that's just going to make him a more relatable coach. Guys last year liked to tell me that he was truly a player's coach. He truly understood what they were about, and he respected their time, which a lot of guys said not many coaches around the league do. Mm-hmm. Cliff Kingsbury, you know, in his meetings, he's very, you know, he comes in, he's to the point, and then he's out. And then, he, you know, like I said, doesn't waste their time, doesn't have mottos, doesn't have sayings, no hoopla and fluff around him. And I think that's just going to take one more step in year two.
How many wins for this team, Josh?
I think if they hit on all cylinders and they don't get bit by the injury bug, I think we would be looking at 9 to 10 wins in a playoff berth. Mm-hmm.
And so the defense is fixed enough in your view? Because that was the deal last year.
Yeah.
Not enough defense. It was atrocious. Outside of Chandler Jones and Buda Baker, it was just not good. So you think it's fixed?
Yeah, I think atrocious is being nice. I mean, it was terrible to watch. I mean, it was awful. I think what they did, revamping their front seven by adding Jordan Phillips and Devon Kennard, they're going to get so much more push up front that they didn't have last season. And that's going to take a lot of pressure off of Chandler Jones and let him kind of run free. I'm not going to be surprised if he hits Michael Strahan's NFL sack record of 22 and a half this year. I will not be surprised at all. Then on the back end, obviously Patrick Peterson's back for a full year. Getting Drake Kirkpatrick could be the move of the year, replacing Robert Alford, because you're getting a veteran, solid cornerback to fill that position, which they've had a lot of issues, yep, you know, at sustaining that position ever since they let Gerard Powers go a few years ago. So now you have two solid corners, you know, an all-pro safety in Baker. You have some young guys at the other safety, but that can be worked out just fine. And then obviously adding Isaiah Simmons, who I think we're going to see used around the field more than the Cardinals are trying to let on.
Stay safe. Have fun in this different year of covering the sport. We'll get into that another time, but I appreciate it as always. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
There's Josh Weinfuss there with ESPN. You can check out all of his content at ESPN.com and follow Josh on Twitter. He does a terrific job. And we're back with more after this timeout. Thanks again to Josh Weinfuss with ESPN. Huge news on the DeAndre Hopkins contract and the Cardinals, 3-12-1 in September since 2016. awful with a capital A, but can they get off to a good start up in San Francisco? So, Eric, I know you've been out of town. I know you've not had a chance to follow the Three Green Lights story closely. You took off last week after the AIA and the executive board had their big press conference, their big announcement, to which I was completely unimpressed. And because Three Green Lights has been out there for the last few weeks, anybody who's been paying attention to this high school football in Arizona story knows that they all have to meet three green lights in order to go to play. And it's the percentage, the numbers, the percentage of players that are out there trying to get 10 per 100,000, even without a vaccine. It's just not, it's not feasible. And it last week was disingenuous to not lead with. And when the AIA starts with a, there seems to be some confusion. There always seems to be some confusion. And so I have had high school coaches and administrators since last Wednesday afternoon that said, three green lights. How are we going to get there? Exclamation point. And then there's coaches that are like, oh, what are you talking about? You're so negative, Brad. You're just so negative. You're not loving on the kids. Like, okay. Clearly, you haven't been watching the last 30 plus years. Clearly, you want to hear what you want to hear. And so I've tried to defend David. I've tried to look at the AIA objectively and say, there's some good people down there, and there are, okay? There's some well-intentioned people, but they have crapped the bed again on this. This is where you have to be completely transparent. This is where you have to step forward on Wednesday and say, here's where we are. Not, oh, we're playing. Oh, it's so awesome. It's so amazing. So, in essence, we're sitting here on a Tuesday, and my phone all morning long has been blowing up. I just had an assistant coach, been around. Other coaches, head coaches, I'm not going to say who they are. That's the other part. Name names. That's not how it works. It's called journalism. Try it sometime. Fake news. No, they're all right here. Here's one, okay? This is from a power program. Power program, like one of the best of the best. There's a mob of coaches and parents that are becoming irate at Hines because the statements that Arizona was going to play was disingenuous. And he's trying to keep Arizona high school talent from leaving the state. He needs to get in front of it. Needs a PR guy. Yeah. Going on little YouTubes and stammering and stuttering around about what's going on does nobody any good. Somebody lead. Anybody. If David is the front of it, have a strong someone alongside him and say, here's what's happening. Here's what's going on. But to sit here again and have parents and coaches, the players, I think, are oblivious to it. Players that I'm around out in my circles, they don't know. They're just going out and playing. But this, oh, it's all solved. It's all cured. Everything's great. No, it's not. So October 2nd, I know you just want to get on the field. I know you just want to interview some players and shoot some video. I know that about you. I know you're done with this story. I got it. But I think it will be a minor miracle. And what do you know, last night, the governor of Colorado steps in. We're going to play. The governor leads. I've done my part, guys. I went down to the governor. Governor explained it away. Haven't heard anything since. We're just kind of on our own out here. And so if we have to hit this benchmark, I just don't see three green lights across the board. I don't see it. And whenever there is, there seems to be some confusion. 2 days after a major development, a major board meeting, I'm saying there seems to be some confusion. It's like a Friday afternoon news dump. That's not what we need. Okay, we need leadership. We just need some people to step in that aren't sitting there saying, making it all about them. I'm not saying David is. I just think David needs somebody alongside of him. More importantly, David needs the governor to rule on this.
So essentially it was last Wednesday, the AIA selling this beautiful used car, but all the high school football coaches bought the used car without checking the Carfax. This looks really good on the outside, but if you layer back and read the fine print, it's not really that good. Is that a fair assessment of what happened last Wednesday? Because that was, hey, on social media, it's like, we're playing October 2nd. Oh, Let's go. Exclamation point. Hashtag. Yada, yada, yada. I want to see Centennial play Hamilton. I want to see, you know, Boulder Creek make that long drive to play Castile, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But whatever.
Hamilton Liberty. Hamilton Liberty. You know.
So you're saying that not only should we proceed with caution, but we should be realistic in thinking that we're actually going to see games on October 2nd. Is that I'm just basically dumbing this down?
Yeah, if you're dumbing it down, they have to have three green lights, green to play.
What are the three green lights?
I'm trying to explain it without losing you.
I gotcha. I don't know. So, and if you don't know, it's okay. I'm sure there's jargon involved. So.
There's jargon involved. Just know that the third green light involves 10 to 100,000.
Got it.
So when there's red solo cups flying around down at ASU.
Got it.
We're supposed to make sure that COVID doesn't get on the loose when there's red solo cups flying around at ASU.
And 81 new cases today. That's it. 81. But those, you know, it's a sliding scale.
I would just like to have, and I've been saying this, three green lights, green means go, and within a half hour last Wednesday, there was coaches at programs of different sizes, some still on the power side, that said they're not addressing three green lights. And then it starts up on social media, and then there's a letter that David sends out, and it starts with there seems to be some confusion. That's never good. Nobody can defend that. Nobody can defend that. That means you didn't explain properly everything that's going on. So it just feels like there's this rush, and part of it is us. Part of it is us, because I saw on social where there was jumping for joy, can't wait, and wahoo, and look at this scrimmage, and just all this cheerleading and rah-rah. That's not what needs to happen. What needs to happen is lead. Question, is this 100% certain? Is there anything behind door number 4 that these kids were struggling mentally, psychologically, stressed out? I've had a friend of the family whose son was in a space that was bad. And it's just like nobody's talking about the social impact on these kids, the mental stress on these kids. It's just, we want to play football. Yeah, I got it. I got it. We want to play football. I got it. Okay, but what about the mental fatigue that these kids are going through? The Chandler School District has been playing on the football field since June 6th. June 6th! And these kids haven't been able to tackle, pad up, play a game. You don't think that's stressful? So don't jerk around with the kids. Adults, we can handle it. We can handle it. But when you start messing with kids and saying, here it is. And this,
do you believe, Brad, that the AAA was more concerned about winning the press conference last Wednesday than truly being transparent in what needs to happen for us to have games starting on October 2nd? Do you think on Thursday the AAA is like, okay, well, you know, we kind of need to pivot here because we told them the good and we kind of either didn't say or sort of just brushed aside the bad. And now we need to, you know, get ahead of this bad side. And that's why, you know, we get the
two more coaches while we've been talking. Two more coaches.
There appears to be some confusion, dot, dot, dot.
So I'll go back 2 weeks from that. And to answer your question, I haven't talked to David. I haven't bothered to call David. I'm just at the point where we've had David on the show many times, many, many, many times. Okay. I've given the AIA the platform. They've been nice enough to come on. David's been nice enough to come on. Okay. There are coaches that don't want to go public. Some of them, I don't know why they don't want to go public, because I think public pressure from some coaches, it's time for that. We can sit here and point out how 2 weeks ago, remember when 2 weeks ago there was the meeting and they're like, well, we're going to push it back for a week. Remember that? So they push back and they get to last Wednesday. And all the buildup to last Wednesday was, boy, I don't know. It's going to be close. Do you think we're going to have football? You've been asked that a ton. I know. People will come up to you and say, hey, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And so they get to the meeting, and the meeting takes place, and it's all, oh, this is great. This is awesome. And everybody's jumping up and down for joy, when in reality, there is this huge, huge, oh, by the way, behind door number four, that some coaches were aware of, not everybody. And so I have not written about this. I've talked about it a little bit, but because I just needed to sit here and say, okay, when the tsunami comes, and now it's here, I'll be time to weigh in on this. Because when I saw that note Friday, which it's Friday on Labor Day weekend, who exactly is going to be around to look at that note? Not many people. So that is called a news dump, in my opinion. So come back around to Tuesday morning today, and all of a sudden, this thing is just on fire with coaches and people saying, what is going on here? Thought this was all handled. Maybe the pressure that they felt and the backlash that they knew they were going to get if it didn't go through last Wednesday. I don't know how you could go out there and not explain this part. It's like your analogy of the car. Okay. Here's this car. By the way, there's no battery in it.
Right? Oh, by the way, hey, it was totaled in an accident a year ago. It looks really good, it was completely smashed up a year ago, but
we can't find a steering wheel. You know that? I mean, that's really what, when you leave out this little, here's the third green light that you have to hit. And that is that size of a number, that size of a discrepancy. And I don't know who can step in on this. Can the governor step in? Governor so far has just been like, yeah, I got, you know, you guys. Meantime, Governor of California, Governor of Nevada, Governor of Colorado, Governor of New Mexico. Oh, well, look at the political party. It shouldn't matter when it comes to kids. Shouldn't matter. Governor of Oregon, Governor of Washington. Oh, look at the political side. Shouldn't matter. So, yeah, I'm so disappointed that everything wasn't put on the table. And when you have to go back to, there seems to be some confusion, that's just not good. Nobody can explain that away. Nobody. Not in any way, any shape, any form when it comes to kids. There seems to be some confusion. That means you didn't have your shit together. That's it. And from there, you know, I don't know about October 2nd. I don't know. I sit here today, and if I could just have somebody step forward with an iron fist and lead, it'd be great. I don't know who that person is. I don't know who that person is. We have Michael Fabiano on the other side. Stay with us.
I'm now joined by senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated, Michael Fabiano. Michael, week one, it is here. We're so close. A lot has happened. First off the bat, with the addition of Adrian Peterson to the Lions, how are you handling their backfield?
With kid gloves, honestly, because there's a lot of question marks right now. DeAndre Swift is also banged up. He's got the leg. They put Bo Scarborough on injured reserve. So who's going to get the majority of the touches this week against Chicago? It's uncertain. If Swift plays, I'd say he's probably limited. If he doesn't play, it's going to be Kerryon Johnson and Adrian Peterson. And Peterson came in mostly because He knows the offense. He worked with Darrell Bevell during the time together in Minnesota. I also know that Peterson's not a guy who's going to come in and expect to sit on the sidelines. So either way, it's going to be a committee scenario. I'm not big on anybody in that backfield this week, so I would fade all of them if possible. If you have to start one, if Swift is out, it would be Kerryon Johnson, but a lot of question marks there.
And that takes me to my next question. With week one and all of these matchups, who are some that you are playing due to their matchups?
So we'll start off with a couple at the quarterback position. I really like Carson Wentz this week against the Washington football team. He's had five straight games where he scored over 18 fantasy points against them, went over 20 fantasy points in both games against them last year. So even, you know, without guys like Alshon Jeffrey and Jalen Reagor, I think he's a very good start. So is his top wide receiver, DeSean Jackson, who tends to dominate against teams he used to play for. It's a weird trend, but look it up. He typically does very well against his former team. So I like him in that matchup as well. You also will be looking at Tyler Higbee at the tight end position against my beloved Dallas Cowboys, but the Cowboys were brutal against tight ends last year. They gave up a league high 104 catches, over 63 yards per game, the third most points of tight ends. So he's a very, very good play. Going back to that Washington-Philadelphia game, I like Terry McLaurin. Game script could be in his favor. Washington could be behind, have to throw the ball a lot. And Dwayne Haskins' favorite target will be McLaurin. And I don't necessarily know that Darius Slay is going to shadow McLaurin throughout that contest. So if you're worried about him, well, that may not be as big of an issue from a fantasy perspective this week.
Flip side, who are you sitting due to their matchup?
Don't like Aaron Rodgers this week. And I know that seems crazy because he's been long, you know, one of the elite quarterbacks in fantasy football. But here's the problem. Last year, coming off a season where he was a massive disappointment, last year scored fewer than 16 fantasy points in both games against Minnesota. This is a game that Vegas expects to be very close. The line's only 2.5, so you're probably not going to see any garbage time situations or any favorable game script from Rodgers. I think they're going to run the football, so he is a guy that I would avoid this week. Devontae Parker may be hard to avoid, but I would certainly beware the matchup. Now, in last year, week 17, he dominated Stephon Gilmore, had over 21 fantasy points against him. So I'm guessing Gilmore may want to exact a little bit of revenge. And also overall, last year, the Patriots gave up just 15.4 fantasy points per game to receivers who are lined out wide. And Parker had a lot of his success without Preston Williams, who is expected to be back. And at the tight end position, Austin Hooper is a fade for me. I know he was one of the top tight ends last year, but now he's in Cleveland, more mouths to feed. Baltimore's defense was really tough on tight ends last year. They only gave up 3 touchdowns, the fewest fantasy points to the position. So Hooper is someone that I would be, if I'm starting him, I'm not expecting much. And I'm guessing most people have enough depth at the tight end position where they can afford to sit Austin Hooper this week.
And what about defense? What defenses have good matchups this week?
I like Buffalo this week against the Jets without question. The Indianapolis Colts could be a good play too against the Jacksonville Jaguars. You're going to want to take a look at those two defenses specifically as maybe being one of the two in the top 10. I think Buffalo is probably the number one option at the position. The Patriots defense is a top 10 option this week as well. Although I would say with all the opt-outs they had, there's some question marks there, but you know, Miami and Ryan Fitzpatrick, there's good Ryan Fitzpatrick and there's bad Patrick. So depending on which one you get this week, if it's the guy who turns the ball over a ton, well, the Patriots defense could be a nice play. Philadelphia also is a very nice play among defenses this week in week one.
Now, Josh Kelly had a great camp with the Chargers. Do you see him getting many touches in LA?
I hope so, because he's one of my favorite late round rookie sleepers. I really do, because there are enough touches for him to make an impact. Now, we know Austin Eckler is going to be the guy, but he's probably going to get 16 to 18 touches per game. That means you've probably got about 12 to 15 touches out there with Melvin Gordon no longer in the mix. And if Kelly can win that top spot ahead of Justin Jackson and behind Austin Eckler, well, suddenly he is going to be in the mix maybe to see 10 to 12 touches per game. Time will tell. I don't know that I'd start him this week, but it will be interesting to see what his role is in Los Angeles' offense against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Let's go to the Patriots with Damian Harris on IR and them releasing Lamar Miller. Who is your number one running back for week one for the Patriots?
It's certainly James Washington, because he is a guy who's going to see a lot of opportunities as a pass catcher. He's basically a wide receiver in a running back's body. So I would certainly play him against the Dolphins, who struggled against running backs last year. But also, I mean, Sony Michel's back in the mix. with Lamar Miller gone, with Harris out, you're looking at Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead. Burkhead will see some touches, no doubt about that. But Michel could lead that Patriots backfield in terms of carries. And as I mentioned, the Dolphins, not great against running backs last year, gave up an average of about 26 points per game to that position. So Michel goes from being a guy that we're avoiding to suddenly someone we're maybe starting in the flex position. Welcome to the 2020 fantasy football season.
Lastly, let's head back over to California. The 49ers, the activation of Deebo Samuel. How are you handling the wide receivers now for week one?
I'm trying to listen to reports there because I don't know if Deebo is going to be limited. If he is, I'd probably fade him this week. If he's going to be a full go, I'm starting him against Arizona. That game could see some points put up on the board. So it really all depends. Since we're only here on a Tuesday, a lot of the injury reports and sort of the options in terms of the wide receiver position in San Francisco. We're not sure if it's going to be a lot of Brandon Ayuk, if it's going to be a lot of Trent Taylor. We're certainly see a lot of George Kittle, but if Deebo can go out there and practice all week, well, then I'm going to feel pretty good about him in week one.
Awesome. Well, week one, like we said, it is here. Thank you so much. As always, it's Michael Fabiano with Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst.